Hello and welcome to Missing Mystic Falls, where we cast a critical eye over every single episode of the hit CW show The Vampire Diaries. My name's Catherine and I'm joined with my co-host Ellie.
Hello.
And we are joined by someone who, rather than tell her boss she didn't have time to read the book he recommended, she dedicated her entire weekend to reading the whole thing. Alice.
And I don't remember a word.
Bless you, you're such a kind soul.
Today we are going to talk about Season 2, Episode 16, The House Guest, which originally aired on the 24th of February 2011. The episode was written by Caroline Dries and directed by Michael Klatterman. Catherine Pierce is back in town and causing chaos, but more importantly, Vampire Diaries is doing glee. Stefan and Bunny are trying to convince the Martins to join them, but more importantly, Caroline is going to sing a little song. Is this Vampire Diaries' first musical episode?
I think it might be.
We've had many a dance, but we've never had a band song. And we'll get on to it. I know you have opinions on this, Catherine, but what a poorly chosen song. Very pointed.
Yeah, I just want to say, what makes something a musical and not just a thing with songs in it is in a musical, the songs move the plot forward. And I would say in this, the songs move the plot forward, therefore it is a musical.
There we go.
Yeah, Vampire Diaries has never done like the Buffy episode where it's like one episode is a. They've never done that, have they? As far as we know.
No, I don't think so. I wish they did. I love extra special musical episodes of things.
I think I used to think season 6 was my favorite season of Buffy, just purely because it had that episode.
It's so good.
It's so good.
Do you think they were inspired by Glee? Because I used to be a big Glee fan. This was peak Glee times 2011.
I don't know. Or was it just like she, because she was Candace King, I swear, was like Miley Cyrus's backup singer or something.
Was she?
Wasn't she? So was it also just like they know that she can sing and like let's promote it? Yeah.
I feel like if they tried to emulate Glee, maybe they'd have tried harder.
They did a cover, classic Glee.
They did a cover. Mm. There was no dancing. There was no group thing. Like,
also, sorry, the reason we can get onto the episode, but like the reason there is like a music option is because the Grill's got live music because apparently it's struggling for business. If the Grill is struggling
for business, it's because everyone keeps dying, just using population.
I do not understand the financials of this establishment because it's the only place in town. It's busy every single time we go there, whether it's early in the morning or late at night. How are they for struggling for business? And why is it up to Matt, a busboy, to generate new income streams?
Yeah, I don't know. Because, yeah, even though more people are dying and, like, chaos always happens at the Grill, it's never not busy. And people are there
Everyone's there
for gossip. Do you know what it is? It's because like they just let Rick and Damon just like take bottles from behind the bar and I bet you they don't charge them for it.
Yes. Who owns the Grill?
I don't know. I don't think we've ever met them.
I feel like because it's such a staple of Mystic Falls, like it must be one of the founding families. Is it like the Fells or something?
Maybe.
No, because they're all newscasters.
Yeah. I think they're all newscasters.
Well, apparently. It can't be the Forbes because Liz was really annoyed that they were serving underage people. Mm. So like Liz would know surely.
Could it be the Gilberts?
I want to say
John owns the bar.
He would ban Damon.
Could you imagine John owning the bar? I want to say it's the Lockwoods because they just like own everything. Would be my guess. But I think Carol would make it better than it is.
Yeah,
Carol wouldn't put up
She'd make
with
it
the way the Grill
bar.
Is now.
Yeah, I feel like if Carol was in charge, it would be turning a profit though.
Yeah.
Mm, I agree.
I wonder if this mystery ever gets revealed.
Yeah. Who owns the Grill? Someone tell us, please. There must be a way.
Anyway, this episode opens up with Stefan and Elena. And guys, they're going to go to school today.
I kind of enjoy that they at least acknowledge that they haven't. Because I feel like a lot of things try and pretend that life goes on as normal whilst all this chaos is happening. At least Elena is like, oh, that thing we've forgotten about. Which, fair play, they have.
Yeah. I thought it was just really cute between the two of them. And then also, yeah, very thank you for pointing out that they're never in school because they're never in school and that shouldn't be normal.
I also have to admit, I did enjoy this like Elena Catherine opening sequence. I thought it was very good. Catherine is just an icon.
I love it because also as the audience, you're like, oh my God, is Stefan making out with Catherine? Because when I rewatched it, I was like, he's normally really good at like telling when he's not kissing Elena. So then it really threw me. But the fact that both Salvatore's like, go for the neck.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, oh, whichever one's Elena, I feel really bad for her because that's not nice.
Yeah, yeah. Catherine's back in town. So immediately doppelganger hijinks ensue and the Salvatore boys are just confused about who's who. I did like that to tell them apart, they put Catherine in a really big scarf.
I know. Yeah. And I love when she, so basically they find out Damon attacks Elena, or like Catherine thinking it's Elena, and then Stefan's upstairs and he comes downstairs and then he's like, oh no, who's in my room? So he attacks another Elena, and then you find out the one downstairs was actually Catherine, and she comes in so sassy being like, it's so easy like being you to Elena or whatever it is. Oh, it's getting really easy being you to her, which I do love.
I guess of all characters to mimic, Elena probably isn't the hardest.
Yeah, what do you need? Just a furrowed brow.
Yeah. Bit worried, you know.
Yeah, or just being like, oh, I'm so sorry, or like, I'm ready to sacrifice myself, and that's fine. I also wonder, like, I was going to ask you guys this, and we can also discuss it later on if it's better to discuss later on. But when they reveal it is Catherine, she doesn't change her hair back. It's straight the whole time, which I know works for how the episode ends. But do you think they did it just so it was just easier for Nina to film?
Oh yeah, definitely. I thought that when I was watching it, like, they've got the same hair, they're dressed really similarly. I assume it's so, because it takes like 2 hours normally to change between them, so to keep that time as small as possible, particularly as they do have scenes together, and try and make it a bit easier for the crew and the cast.
Yeah, because it goes on for ages and I'm like, she's still in Elena's clothes, she's still got Elena's hair at all the points. So I was just like, well, this.
Yeah.
Yes, and Catherine says she's stayed in town to help to take down Klaus, because if they take down Klaus, that serves her agenda. So Catherine's kind of on their side. But she hasn't changed that much, because immediately when she doesn't get her way, she threatens to kill Jenna.
Yeah. She's like, either let me on your team or I'll just kill everyone. I'm not going to leave. I'm just going to cause mayhem separately to Klaus.
So well. Also, I feel like she knows that they're idiots. The whole time, I feel like she can so easily win her wily way, no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, I do think they'd be idiots to actually trust her. Like, we love Catherine, but I wouldn't trust her as far as I could throw her if I was the Salvatore boys.
No, absolutely.
No, and also she does admit this episode that, like, she knew that Damon would die if he stabbed Elijah, and she was like, well, it got me out of the tomb, so I don't mind. So, like, she's already tried to kill him, like, once a couple of days ago. No. I think days, or I never know the timeline. So, she's not exactly, like, rushing to save them or protect them in any way. Except Stefan, which she's always said that she will save Stefan.
Yeah. Yep, she's favourite.
But all these kind of things are leading up to, so there's girls' night. So, before girls' night, we get Matt and Caroline having a chat, the Caroline and Matt drama, as Elena calls it, and the Catherine drama. But what do you think of this Caroline and Matt scene?
I will say I really hated this whole episode because it was so bitty, and the bits with girls' night were so jarring to, like, what's happening elsewhere, like, really quick switches to such a different vibe. I'm not here for Caroline and Matt. Never been here for Caroline and Matt. I'm also not here for Elena being like, oh, I've got to do girls' night because Bonnie's lost her powers and Caroline and Matt are having drama again.
The, like, way they do, once again with Bonnie, though, the way they do it, Bonnie's freaked, is what Elena says. If your best friend, like, she's lost her powers. This is a huge deal and she's freaked. And then we see her at girls' night and she's just chilling. Like, they don't really go into any of the, like, oh my God, she's lost her powers. Like, how's this affecting her? She's just there being like, yeah, pizza or whatever. Like, what?
There's what? No conversation. There's no conversation about it at all. The only conversation that Bonnie, like, not brings, I will not say she, it's not like she's bringing conversation, but the only bit that we're allowed to see is talking about Jeremy. It's not talking about her powers.
And, like, I wish they'd gone into this with something, because I feel like that whole trope, like, her losing her powers and then getting them back at the end of the next episode with no discussion, no real draw, like, nothing happened. What was the point of that? Unless they were going to like delve into some sort of character element.
That's not Bonnie's role on the show. Bonnie's role on the show is to be useful for the white characters. She is not to have any agency or storyline for herself.
It's honestly, and like the first time I watched this through, like I'll have noticed it, but on this rewatch, the amount, it's so glaringly obvious, and how little they, yeah, delve into Bonnie, use Bonnie, it is absolutely insane.
I don't know if you guys are aware of the trope, and I'm just going to call it what it's called and say a word I don't normally say, but the trope is called magic, like the magic Negro. And it's a really common trope in cinema and pop culture. I think the term was coined by the very famous director, Spike Lee. And essentially it's when black characters in fantasy or sci-fi or supernatural, the characters have these mystical magic powers, but they only exist to further white characters or to give them sage advice, and or are used as a plot device. And Bonnie, her character, 100% falls into this trope. So when we talk about, and I know we're not like the best place to talk about it, but when we talk about or complain about our frustration with Bonnie, I think it's important and relevant to say that this is part of a huge issue of how black people are portrayed within the fantasy genre. And it's a really, really common trope that is so overt with Bonnie. It's so overt and it's so obvious.
She has like no agency in any way, and it's like more obvious in some episodes than none, but like it's always there and it's always obvious. But there are just like so many things, like we were just saying, they're not talking about her powers or her powers getting lost at all. No one's like, how are you doing? At one point Jeremy's like, we've got to get it back if Catherine's back, like you can't be powerless with Catherine out of the tomb. Like, that's not a helpful comment. And then even not even like magic related, but like when Bonnie speaks to Elena about wanting to date Jeremy, Elena's like, he deserves to be with someone like you. It's not what Bonnie deserves, and whether Bonnie deserves someone better, or as, I can't think of the way to phrase it, like better than Jeremy or as like great as Jeremy is. It's about like the pain that Jeremy's gone through and what he needs and deserves Bonnie. What she wants and needs is regardless, which is just like, ugh.
Yeah, and it's also not like an isolated situation. Yes, it's most obvious with Bonnie because she is the only recurring non-white character. But I would say that the Martins also fall into this trope too.
Yeah, and the witch,
Brie.
Like
Brie,
yeah, Brie, but also the one I can't remember her name at the Lucy.
Yeah,
it is all the same. And like, I think not only are they putting those characters in those roles, but they're also not like, we haven't seen a sort of black character other than in those roles.
Yeah, absolutely. And most of them, not all of them, but most of them also suffer really violent deaths. And I do think it's a pattern.
It's also, they're not in the show for that long. They're like always been like, oh, these people are so powerful. Then they have a really violent death and it moves on so quickly. Like this episode, prime example, but like doesn't Damon rips out Bree's heart in like the same episode that we meet her. Like that was I think our first heart grab, and you don't see one for ages, so it's one of the most violent deaths we see at the beginning. The way Luca is murdered in this scene, even the way like Dr. Martin's murdered as well at the end, it's not as graphic as Luca, but like both of them are not nice ways to die. And it's just done so quickly and people move on like it doesn't even matter, whereas, and I'm not saying like she shouldn't be, but the amount of credit that Elena, the amount of like airtime Elena gets about her parents compared to the airtime that some of these characters get. And we don't even meet her parents. They're already dead by the time the show starts. Like all of this stuff. It's mad. Even Grams, like Bonnie had like no grieving time for Grams, or if she did, she did it off camera.
Yeah, it was off screen. Yeah.
I miss Sheila.
Oh, I miss Sheila. I just suddenly thought about Sheila.
She was brilliant.
And what's so frustrating is, and I do actually think Graham's death did serve the story, but you know, have more than two black characters and then they don't bear the entire weight of representation. But it's frustrating that these are good characters. They created interesting and dynamic characters. Our issue with Luca and Dr. Martin is that they haven't been given enough to do and that we want to see more of them because they are good characters. Oh, Ellie's mum's just entered the room. Hello.
Hello.
Catherine says hello.
Oh, hello.
Thank you so much. Sorry, I was just getting a wine top up from my mum. Yeah, no, fully agree. Like, I thought the whole episode, I spent being like, and I've thought this before, but this time I was really like, God, Dr. Martin's cool. God, he's amazing. Like, he is so powerful. He's also just like really threatening when he wants to be. And I think there's so much that you could do with them. Like, imagine if they managed to save his daughter from Klaus, and the things you could do with like the Martin family, Luca and his daughter and Dr. Martin would be amazing. It would be so interesting. They must be such a powerful family, and they're not, they're like, it's not explored in
or it could have even been a better, like, even if Luca had still died and they had Dr. Martin, he came on side and they could have done something interesting, like, is he really on their side, like a long, I don't know, something.
There's so many things they could do, because Luca and Bonnie also have great chemistry. They ignore that to force us to witness the most awkward kiss in the world between Jeremy and Bonnie. I literally wrote down, Bonnie seems like a closeted lesbian who's being forced to kiss her high school boyfriend. That is what it felt like to me.
It's such a terrible relation, and he's like, it just feels, it feels very forced. And I can't remember, I might be getting my episodes mixed up, but I also feel like Jeremy's so uncaring about like Luca's death, like glad he's gone. And like, one, he had a relationship with Bonnie, and also two, is Jeremy like, what they did to Luca is far worse than what
you don't need to,
he did to them.
You don't need to like the person, but you should feel bad for the way that they died, and you should acknowledge that. But no, I,
and it feels like he's like, just yay, I've got Bonnie to myself now. And ugh, he's such an ass.
No, he did force her in the school, because like, it's not like she didn't want to kiss him, but she wanted to speak to Elena first, and he has no respect for that whatsoever. He's just like, she's not here. But also, they're in the school where she goes to, where her friends are around. Someone could very easily be like, I saw Bonnie and Jeremy kissing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like him. I don't like them. I don't like Matt and Caroline.
Oh, I don't like Matt and Caroline. I feel like also when, I feel like Matt gets all defensive and Caroline's done nothing wrong any of these times. And he's just awful. He's like, make a decision or leave me alone. You know how I feel. She doesn't necessarily know how he feels. That was a while ago.
Also, he broke up with her. Let's remember who ended the relationship. I know that she like pushed him to that decision because it was like for the benefit, but like, he, at the end of the day, he broke up with her.
Yes, maybe just to center. So the reason we're talking about the Martins in this episode is because Stefan and Bonnie have the bright idea, and I don't think it's a bad idea, to get Luca and Jonas on their side, because they were trying to kill Klaus and they could work together. So they try to have a meeting between them all. But understandably, the Martins think it's better to side with, you know, the 1,000-year-old vampire than the bunch of teenagers to like save their daughter.
Shock horror.
Also, the bunch of teenagers who just like seem to kill anyone who doesn't work with them. Like, they don't have a great track record.
No.
Yeah, so they, what they do instead is they do this really cool spell. Dr. Martin does a spell and like sends Luca's, I don't know how to phrase it, because it's kind of like his spirit but his body. How would you explain the spell?
What does corporeal form mean?
I guess that's your bodily form, isn't it?
Okay, so the opposite of that. Non,
but they do send his body. Well, I feel like they,
I think it's just,
I guess, a ghost of his body.
It's just for us to, I guess, to see where Luca is. It's more for the audience, because like Damon and Catherine can't see him, but they can physically interact with
him. And also, like, he can move things. He has to be there in some sort of physical way for everything else that happens.
So the spell is like, they picture where Elijah is, Dr. Martin and Luca, but Luca's also physically with Dr. Martin, but he's also split physically in the Salvatore house, but neither Damon or Catherine can see him. They can both sense something's there, and he's trying to pull the dagger out of Elijah, but when he tries to pull it up, Catherine pushes it down, and they like have this fight, and he does stab Catherine, so he can interact with things, but he can't be can't be seen.
Maybe they've also made him invisible. Maybe the spell is in two places at once, and they've spelled him.
What a spell. What a spell to do.
Well, Dr. Martin's super powerful.
He's so powerful. He's so cool.
He's so good.
I really like him as a character.
I also felt with this bit, you know, up until it takes a turn, I thought it was a really good scene. I thought it was really tense with Luca being in the house and them not being able to see him. And I mean, it reminded me of a lot of the like creepy scenes in season one. Like, I think it kind of harkened back to before it lost that kind of horror factor of the show. So I thought it was cool. And then,
And I enjoyed kind of his interactions with like Catherine and the power, like, because Catherine's such a powerful character, to see her kind of like frightened, scared, and I think stabbed was a really interesting like power dynamic, which they swiftly ruined.
Yeah, because it was, he thought it was Elena. I guess they didn't know that Catherine was out of the tomb either. And because she had her straight hair, Luca was like, oh, Damon and Elena are just reading in the living room. So didn't think she was a threat until he couldn't like overpower, but I don't really like that word, but I guess I'll stick with it, overpower her to get the dagger out of Elijah. And then Jonas is like, it's Catherine, stab her.
And then Damon burns Luca to death with a flamethrower,
something which he was very casually just trying to burn Elijah's body with as well. There's a lot of burning of bodies today.
They want the dagger back, so they were trying to find if there was any way to destroy the body. So basically, they were trying to write why on earth they would have a flamethrower in that room.
Yeah, and Luca then catches fire back with his dad, and he's burnt alive. And like, Damon knew, because I think Catherine was a bit confused as to what was going on. And the second like Damon puts out the flamethrower, he's like, he knew it was like a witch trick.
Yes, I don't think it would have made a difference to him, but I don't think he knew who he was killing.
I also don't think he necessarily, like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like he is quite naive with these things and will just, like, go gung-ho. I don't think he knew really if he was killing what he was doing. He just wanted it gone. As you said, I don't think it would have made a difference.
Luca's death is...
Oh, it's horrid.
Horrific.
Oh, what a gruesome death.
You literally see his skin burnt to a crisp. It's awful. And then you see his dad desperately trying to save him.
And then you immediately cut to Girls' Night at the Grill, where they're like, woo, live music, a band, like so quickly.
I just want to say something, and we'll get back to this, but 1657 is the timestamp when Luca burns to death. Let's keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Of the episode, it's 16 minutes and 57 seconds in. Wait, I'll come back to that later.
Like, sorry, you're not saying it's about 5 o'clock. You're like, he's killed 16 minutes into the episode.
Into the episode, yeah.
Got you. Yeah.
Okay. But then it's Girls' Night.
This feels like a filler. Like, what are they doing?
It's also such an annoying filler because, like, Jenna joins Girls' Night because she and Rick are having problems because he's not being honest about Isabel. And she's venting to her, like, she calls herself a parent, so, like, her child, but yeah, her niece and her friends, who all know what Rick is lying about and all know the truth, and none of them, I know it's not any of like, it's not Caroline or Bonnie's place, but none of them are filling Jenna in when she's like, people deserve the truth and I can't believe he won't speak to me. And sorry, I'm rambling, but I did really back Rick earlier in the episode speaking to Elena when they are at school, being like, I don't want to lie to Jenna at all, but I know that it's like, it's your call. So I will either not date her and not lie to her, or you can tell her the truth, but I can't tell her. I was like, that's fair. But he could also do bits around it.
I think he could have been better, but yeah, that is one of the few decent things Rick has done.
It's been an issue for months. This is what I keep coming back to. He's not suddenly started lying to her. He was happy to lie to her for months, and suddenly he's found a conscience.
I don't think he's found a conscience. I think it's she's called found him out.
Yeah, his lies are over, fair play. And also, like, I get what you're saying. Like, it's really awkward for them to like talk about Rick with Jenna, but also, as you said, Jenna is a parent. Why is she discussing her relationship with their history teacher? Like, from her point of view, it's her relationship with their history teacher. She's not just discussing it with Elena, she's discussing it with Bonnie and Caroline, and it's wildly inappropriate.
Well, Rick does discuss it with Elena first, because Jenna's like, oh, he told you, and then Elena's like, oh, he feels really bad. So like, oh. That's way further across the line than Jenna is, I would say, because I guess then Jenna's like, well, you already know, you've already been filled in. I guess I may as well carry on.
It's bad.
Honestly. Why does no one understand boundaries?
God knows.
One highlight of Girls' Night, I do want to say we got a little bit of product placement. I have no idea
was that the
what
car?
The product was. It was
like
kind
an
of
iPad
tablet.
Wrong episode,
no.
Sorry.
No, that's next episode. This one we got a tablet, which Bonnie uses to get pizza, and she searches on the YP mobile network. Don't know what that is. And she just searches the word pizza. Nothing else. To order pizza, she just searches pizza on Google, essentially.
Yeah, to get numbers of a pizza place. But I'm surely if they've got pizza multiple times, they know the number of the pizza place.
There will be one place that delivers pizza in Mystic Falls. Come
surely.
On now. There's one restaurant.
Also, they were given the menu choices and it was pizza or Chinese. And I can't remember exactly who said, but it was like, oh, well, obviously. I do not think that pizza is an obvious choice over Chinese for a takeaway. Personally, I think that's very much up for debate.
Oh. That line would make sense if it was like pizza or salad or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know what I mean?
No, I will say I had exactly the same thought out. Like, I was just like, I would personally rather Chinese, but not on any given day. That's the thing with us. We all flip moods. It's not like we're always like 110% pizza.
No. But I think, I just don't think it's obvious. I don't think that, you know.
I agree, but with absolute love to you, Alice, no decision has ever been obvious for you.
You might be right.
Also, we should discuss their movie choice. So Caroline's heartbroken and she's desperate to watch The Notebook.
Bless her. Of course she is. Yeah.
Do you think it was at the like Notebook hype?
Oh, yeah, probably. When was The Notebook?
A bit later. Notebook's like 2007, I think.
No, then I guess, but it did go on for a while. Like, I feel like people referred to it as like a big
there's a whole One Tree Hill episode referring to guys getting The Notebook, where they like come around and the girls make them watch The Notebook, and then at the end they're like, he's really building this house for her exactly the way she wanted it. And it's really funny.
I saw a tweet that was like, girls don't tell you they like you, they just invite you around to watch all of the Twilight Saga with you.
Absolutely.
So good. I get it. We all want Ryan Gosling when times are tough.
Question for you. I know my answer. Mm. Ryan Gosling is Ken. Ryan Gosling is Noah from The Notebook.
You don't want to date Ken. Do you want to date Ken?
I would say Ryan Gosling doing the press tour of Ken.
Yeah.
Talking about Kennedy and the double sunglasses.
Yeah.
Or, okay, how about Ryan Gosling in The Notebook or Ryan Gosling in that film with Emma Stone that I can't remember the name of?
Crazy Stupid Love. I raise you Ryan Gosling in Crazy Stupid Love, and I would take Ryan Gosling in The Nice Guys.
I haven't seen
I've
it
I've never
either.
Seen that.
Oh, you know, you'll like it. You'll both actually really like The Nice Guys. It's Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe in the 70s. They're PIs. They're trying to solve a murder case, but it's really very funny.
Oh, okay.
Got to give it a whirl now. You set a high bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was almost going to try and bring in James Marsden, but I will not divert us anymore off from...
We watched 27 Dresses last night. So I am...
So good.
I was talking at length about James Marsden.
Fantastic.
What's your favourite James Marsden? I can't tell. It might be Enchanted for me, but he's great in Corny Collins. He's also amazing in 27.
I think it might be Hairspray. I just love him in a suit.
Yeah.
So my favourite to date is probably 27 Dresses, but I think his best performance is Corny Collins, and I could write an essay about his performance at Corny Collins and how he manages to be like a closeted gay man, but with like no... mention in the script, but equally to me it's painfully obvious, and I think it's a genius performance. Genius.
Oh, but I do just love him in Enchanted where he's like, oh, Giselle. And it's,
you know,
so
what,
also amazing in Enchanted.
I feel like all those characters bring such different but amazing.
I don't think there's enough recognition. He's also very good in the Nicholas Sparks Better Me, which I'd never seen before until we did our like
Nicholas Sparks
saga. More recognition for James Marsden, please. What a beautiful man.
This is actually a backdoor pilot into our spin-off podcast, which is just about James Marsden and Ryan Gosling, where we watch one of their movies every week.
I wouldn't be angry if we did that. I'd be like, okay.
But We then go to the grill. They decide girls' night. They didn't want to have this conversation. Instead of having a fun debate about James Marsden or Ryan Gosling, they decide instead they're going to the grill.
Oh, he's in the notebook as well. I forgot about that.
Yes, Ellie. Beautiful segue.
Lovely. So good. Amazing. Yeah, they were like, no, we need to go dancing. And you know what I rate so much is when Jenna walks in and she sees Rick, she says she needs a drink and she doesn't get herself like a beer or a wine or like a bourbon. No, she goes straight for a shot of tequila. And I'm like, yes, Jenna.
Yeah.
Jenna is a woman after my heart.
That's my girl.
So good. But also, sorry, and then Rick comes up to try and talk to her and she says last year she was a grad student who smoked a lot of pot and now she's a parent. Last year?
I think so, because it's like April and Elena's parents died at the beginning of summer, right?
That's wild.
Yeah.
It really took me out of it too. I was like, my God.
Lots happened this year, right?
Crazy year.
I think it also puts some of the relationships into perspective sometimes, because I feel like you think of Elena and Stefan as this like long-term epic love. They've probably only been dating, what, a few months? Mm-hmm. Maybe a bit more than that. And they broke up.
And they broke up in that time.
You know, Caroline and Matt were probably only dating a few weeks at this point.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, Jenna and Rick also, they've not been dating like a full year.
What are they playing at?
They should not be, like, Rick and Jenna should not be so open about their relationship to his students if they haven't been dating for too long. Not to circle back to that, but that is wild.
And then, basically, Bonnie and Elena encourage Caroline to, you know, make a move on Matt. And she does so by getting up on stage and living her karaoke dream.
So, bye. 20 minutes and 20 seconds through the episode, Caroline is singing Eternal Flame. So 16 minutes and 57 seconds, a boy was burning to death. And less than 3 minutes, or just over 3 minutes later, Caroline is singing a song called Eternal Flame.
Yikes.
Do you think they clocked this? No.
Do you think it feels too on the nose for them to be, like, even for them?
Crazy. Like,
think of the music that we've had in the background. Like, they pick very on the nose songs for backgrounds of scenes. Like, we've spoken about it before. And I just feel like they go for those songs and either they just, like, could not care less, because apparently no one in the episode is meant to care about Luca's death. Or they're that idiotic, but I don't think they can be that idiotic considering their previous song choices
this
in the previous episodes.
This one just seems too mean. I don't know. Maybe it is by choice.
I don't think they clocked it. Just because, yes, they do make obvious song choices. They're not normally doing this like dark, twisted kind of humour. I hope what it was they asked Candice what she would like to sing and this is what she suggested, or she gave like five options and this was one of them. I really hope they didn't do that, because it's sick.
It's like celebrating Luca's death in a very morbid and twisted way. I think they must have just been idiots.
I mean, I would hope so, yes. Yeah. But I also don't know how you can be that idiotic, but I would really hope so.
Oh God.
They were just like it's two separate scenes, it doesn't really interlink. But when they're done, because literally the second the song's ends, Matt like goes up and kisses Caroline, and then you're right back at Dr. Martin's flat with him grieving. It's like very in between.
Mm-hmm. It is in the middle of it. I think they didn't notice.
Yeah, we'll go with that,
please.
Terrible song choice. Candice does have a lovely, lovely voice. I thought she sang it very well.
What do we think?
Yeah, it wouldn't like woo me. I wouldn't, if I was Matt, I would just be like, no.
I don't really feel like anyone singing a song like that would woo me. Like, I don't know.
No, but yeah, there could have, I agree. Nah. There could have been way better song.
She has a lovely voice. It's quite cringy. The scene is like, irrespective of the boy burning to death, the scene is a bit, ugh.
Yeah.
Even Jenna, Bonnie and Elena are all like terrified when she gets on stage. And then what I really also don't like about the scene is like you look at Matt and he looks over to Elena for a nod to be like, isn't this great? And I feel like you didn't need to add I think it's like clearly Elena's trying to be like a supportive friend and oh how lovely, but like didn't need to add that in.
It just looks bad on Matt again, which is no surprise.
Yeah.
All in all, I wasn't a fan of like any of the girls' night stuff.
No.
And I say this as a girl who loves girls' night.
This is not what girls' night is. Our girls' night don't have one of us ditching the group so that they can get back together with their boyfriend.
No.
No. But anyway, Dr. Martin is on a warpath and he arrives at the grill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Stefan goes to like confront him and he does that mind thing and then he goes to the grill to find Elena.
He's scary though.
He is scary.
We haven't really had a witch be like, they've been in the way, they've been like an adversary, but they've never been like squaring down properly against them. Like he feels so powerful, he feels so threatening, like he literally sets the grill on fire
and he doesn't even flinch. Like Bonnie will do something like that and be taken away, and she has referenced it before, like Dr. Martin could relift like the tune spell by himself and he was fine. So yeah, we already knew hints of it, but I agree, we've never like seen him, or we've never seen him angry. We've only seen him do what Elijah's asked him to do, nothing of his own. Yeah, he smashes all the lights, sets it all on fire. And also I was like, people were scared, but were they not just like, what, how has this happened? Matt's very chilled.
No one seemed to question that this was just like, oh whoops, we now have a fire and everything smashed.
It's another day of Mystic Falls, like the shit just keeps happening. Like, oh, the grill's on fire, what a shock.
I also kind of enjoy, like, I know, I think it's a kind of show of his power, but I also find it quite funny, like Dr. Martin is doing a lot of this stuff that doesn't really causes panic, but it's also a very kind of like dramatic effect stuff. Like, smash the glasses, catch everything on fire. Like, I don't know. There are things that maybe... And
I don't think I don't think he wants to hurt... He's not even there to kill them. He's there to get Elena so that he can make a deal with... I think to make a deal with Klaus himself, maybe, I think is his plan to get Greta back. So I think he's being overdramatic and powerful to scare them.
Yeah, which makes sense, but I guess like there's one point where he's like, no one enters or leaves, and I feel like a sensible thing for him to do would have done that boundary charm, you know, the one that keeps people in and out, but he doesn't do that, he just says it and then people leave.
That's such a good point, Alex.
Including Elena.
That's such a good point.
Yeah, it's very fair. Yeah. That's because Nina didn't want to do any more miming.
Also because Catherine's plan wouldn't have worked, so they needed him to come home, you know, it was all for the plot.
Yeah, yeah. So Elena and Stefan are there in the grill and she's like, I'm so sorry about Luca, please don't. And then they've asked Caroline to, cause a diversion. So Caroline attacks Dr. Martin.
Very dangerous plan. Like, she is the weakest vampire because she's the newest vampire. And that they said Caroline in.
Honestly, just to get Elena, like, this is the thing. Like, they're so unhappy for Elena to die, but then they're so happy for people... like, he could very easily have just killed Caroline. He does the mind thing and Matt comes in all like macho and then he smashes a beer bottle and stabs Matt in the neck with the glass.
Crazy.
Yes, crazy. No. He didn't even use his powers for that, he just did it himself. I wrote Matt got shanked.
Just a side note, I mean, this is awful and Caroline's very stressed, do you think someone would actually be screaming at those decibels? She's so high-pitched, and I don't know if that's, like,
I think it's a lot of... What, like, Caroline?
Which screaming bit?
Looking at... Like, just before she's looking after Matt.
She's quite a high-pitched...
When she's in pain or when she's looking at Matt after Matt?
When she's in pain. She is quite a high-pitched person. She has made that scream before when she's done the... Oh, but this thing, even like Damon and Stefan, also not even like, oh, they're men. I just mean like they just don't often like verbalize their pain. Even when they have that spell on them, they are like screaming throughout.
I honestly have no idea. Like, I have never been tortured and I have never tortured someone. So I don't know what noise people make.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. I don't know. Just sounds really painful. But I guess it's like, how would we know it was super painful if we didn't hear a scream? As the audience, because clearly they think we're idiots.
Yeah. And it's not that, it was so, like, I know she is high-pitched normally. I found this insanely high-pitched. Like, I was like, ow.
Hey, you can say you had a problem with her acting in that scene. That's fine. It's too much. Sometimes people are too much.
Do you know who's always too much for me? Jeremy, because then Elena and Stefan get home and Stefan's like, did you check the house? And Jeremy's like, why do we need to check the house? And this is straight after he's been like, I don't care that Luke is dead.
Okay, this I can't work it out, because Steve McQueen, who plays Jeremy, is not a very good actor. Was that because he delivered the line really poorly? Was that Steve McQueen poorly acting? Or is this part of their plan? Because have they called ahead and set it up? And it was Jeremy poorly acting, but they actually knew that he was in the house.
I don't think they knew, because Bonnie... So basically, like, Elena goes upstairs, Dr. Martin's there, you realise it's Catherine, and she attacks him. But she's like, you didn't need to kill him. So I don't know if she wasn't in on the plan, and then if she wasn't, then Jeremy wouldn't be. My guess is they never loop Jeremy and Bonnie in on anything.
I think the same. I think it was...
But they clearly, this is what I don't understand, is they clearly went there because they thought Jonas would confront them there, because why else would you bring Catherine there? But then they didn't call ahead to the two people that they knew were in the house or going to the house.
Honestly stumped, but I just, like, they leave so many people out of the loop for no good reason.
And I also just don't think that them being like, have you checked the house? No, would be part of the plan, because, I don't know, it just...
So he's surprised?
Yeah.
Because only the plan works on this, the idea that he's surprised that it's Catherine. Because he could take Catherine down if he wanted to. Yeah.
So she bites him, but doesn't actually kill him. And Bonnie comes upstairs and he does something weird with Bonnie. And then Stefan snaps his neck. And Catherine, like, stamps on his throat. Well, not really. Like, not a stamp, but she puts her foot on his throat to hold him down. Not very nice.
I wrote, Catherine kills Dr. Martin. Oh, no, wait. It's Stefan.
Same.
I went on a real journey.
I was like, oh no. But also, Bonnie's like, yeah, he doesn't have to die. And Catherine's like, yes, he did. And they use murder as a first resort in this show, always. It's not a last resort. It's like, oh, this person's a problem. Let's kill them. No alternative. They had to die.
This person was mean to me, so I'm going to kill him.
Yeah. And I feel like they always justify it as well. Like, Bonnie's like, you didn't have to kill him. And it's like, yes, we did. You didn't. You didn't have to. You chose to kill him. But at this point, I think they almost expect the audience to be like, yeah, they did.
They had a very emotional reaction to their son being murdered by that group. And yes, that reaction was extreme because they're an incredibly powerful warlock, but it didn't necessarily mean that they had to die.
Yeah. It just seems unnecessary. But what's also incredibly unnecessary is, as we said, Bonnie then gets her powers back.
So stupid.
So what, she only lost them... last episode?
I think it was last episode.
That is ridiculous. What's the fucking point?
Also, I don't even think it was like a full day, because they talk about things like the night before in this episode, which was last episode, because Elena didn't know Catherine and neither did Stefan. No one knew Catherine was out of the tomb. So I think that had only happened for a night. So, like, literally not even a full day. There's no point in the storyline. I think they just wanted Jonas to be able to give Bonnie away to kill Klaus, but like, he still could have done that regardless of the powers.
Yeah. How much more interesting would it have been if Bonnie and Dr. Martin had worked together potentially, and he had told her about this plan, and, you know, something else had happened, and he hadn't just clasped her head as he died?
Yeah. I fully forgot that she immediately got her powers back, because last week I was like, oh, it's so interesting. Like, Bonnie doesn't have her powers and they needed to fix all the problems, and we've got a really dangerous person on the horizon. She gets them back the next episode. I was talking some absolute bullshit.
No, but also, as like Al's already said, that it's not explored in any way, shape or form in the episode. So even if they did some really big like character exploring of Bonnie being like, I was really finding myself, I was feeling really powerful, and now I'm at a loss, like, that conversation is not there at all. They do literally nothing with it, except to say it's an excuse for a girl's night. Like, there's nothing, nothing.
I hate it.
No one in the writer's room must have been like, yeah, that's a great idea, next episode,
surely not,
Jonas gives powers back. Like, no one must have thought that.
Unless they went, oops, why did we do this? Let's give her powers back.
But like, it's down to the, because they have a writer's room, they probably all write on multiple episodes, but it's down to the showrunners. Like, this is week to week issues. Did they have no oversight? Were they just busy working out how Candy's King could sing in the show?
I think
they were too busy writing that.
Yeah, I think so.
What we do get in this is the whole episode, Damon has been looking to try and find a way to kill Klaus. And with Jonas giving Bonnie her powers back, he also gives her a way to kill Klaus and tells her what to do. And I did like, because it's slim pickings finding something to like for Bonnie because they give her so nothing to do. But I did like how serious she was when she was like, mm-hmm. I know how to kill Klaus when she gave that reveal. Kat was great. She's amazing. Such a shame what they do to her.
Fully agree. And also they were playing James Morrison, Broken Strings in the background. And I love James Morrison. So I wasn't angry about the soundtrack choice, except for this one particular scene. Let me clarify.
We normally praise the Vampire Diaries soundtrack, but today we have beef.
We have beef issues. Except for James Morrison. He can be played at any time. That's fine. And also, sorry, in between the revelation of like something happening to Bonnie with Dr. Martin, us finding out what it is, you have Rick and Jenna coming back to the house and him being like, I can tell you Isabel's dead. I can't tell you things about it, but I can tell you that I love you.
I do feel, I think it, probably even the first time watching this, I felt the second he was like, I can't tell you anything, but I can tell you she's definitely dead. I was like, she's turning up.
Also, it's so funny. This man has the worst luck.
Such bad luck. But also, if I was Jenna and it wasn't like she's dead and she's a vampire and he was telling a half truth, when he was like, there are parts of her death that I just can't tell you, I'd be like, did you kill her?
Yeah, that's what I'd go to as well.
maybe Isabel was in like the CIA and it's a national security. Rick can't divulge it.
You know what? That's actually true, that she could be under a new identity, so he has to say she's dead, and then she could turn up. There is a rational explanation.
We also have a rational explanation that she's a vampire.
Or is that? But yeah, so he's told Jenna she's dead.
True.
And then, lo and behold, there's a doorbell ringing at the end of the episode, and it's Isabel. It's so good.
Jenna answers the door.
It's so funny. I wrote, Isabel's back, but she's still got no emotion in her voice.
No. Nothing. So bad. I feel really bad for this woman, but I just think there were so many better people that they could have cast for Isabel. There must have been.
Yeah. Since we last spoke about Elizabeth, Isabel was last in the show, we've watched Alice. God, what's that show called?
Oh, God, I can't remember. It's like a 90s show.
It's like a 90s show and Miranda Kerr's in it and... Oh, it's about lesbians.
It's not girls. It's not girls.
No. Oh, God, what's that show? What is it called?
I'm having a look.
Oh, The L Word. Yes. The L Word. We've watched The L Word and she's in it.
She's annoying again, though.
Yeah, now I've seen her in two roles. No, this is what I'm going to say. I do think she's a bad actress. Because we were always like, oh, maybe it's just like her character of Isabel who like has no emotions. Maybe that's what's going on and it's just not very effective character work. I've seen her in two shows now.
Interesting.
And I am unimpressed by her in both.
So fair. No, she doesn't. She just doesn't seem like a good actress. And I think there's so much that you can do with Isabel as well. That they don't do, they just bring her in for research purposes.
Also, and I know kids can look quite different from their parents, but there is no way that John Gilbert and Isabel produced Elena. Just no way.
I just they think like if they just give her like long straight hair, that will like convince us, and it does
honestly nothing. So bad. What a lovely twist at the end. Well, not lovely for Jenna, but like a great twist at the end to like do something. But what a terrible character and actress.
I do miss their cliffhanger twists. They haven't done as many of those this season, and I think they're great.
Well, this is after this episode, the show is on break for when it aired. Vampire Diaries was on break for 2 months. So this was their cliffhanger because also, we didn't mention it, but they also had Matt... Caroline reveals to Matt about everything that
Matt finding out Caroline's
she's a vampire, and then he straight away goes, and I liked this actually, what happened to my sister. I like whenever they bring it back to Vicky, and it's also like our last person bar Jenna who doesn't know anything about the supernatural finding out.
I thought his reaction was actually really good and really probably like one of the more, because sometimes people find, I know Elena had a bit of like difficulty, but I think he is really like yeah. what and then like Vicky and things. What I didn't like was when he was freaking out and it was like Caroline was struggling to restrain him. I hate when they do that. They like pick and choose when a vampire is really strong and when they're not, when it's just like if she wanted to.
Yeah, maybe she didn't want to actually have to use like force against him.
Yeah, that's true.
Like how like an adult could restrain a child if they wanted to, but like you don't want to unless like, you know, there's a danger or something, I guess.
Yeah, that's
like if a child is having, not that Matt was having a tantrum, but like if a child was having a tantrum. Yeah, so there's our big old cliffhangers.
Gosh, there's me complaining, like how dare yeah. they finish The Traitors on a Friday and not show us one until the Wednesday when people used to have to deal with like months and months of breaks. I mean, we've dealt with a big thing of gap of Bridgerton, but that's like between seasons.
When's it coming out?
I literally was like, Bridgerton season 3, a year and a half.
It's coming out in May, but there's also a gap. There are like two things. It's May and then June. Are they two seasons? Are they, sorry, this is now our Bridgerton podcast.
So they've split the season in two, which I kind of get, like the streaming model of dumping it all isn't like working very well. So shows are trying, it's like what Stranger Things did. They split like one of their seasons in two. So it's the same thing with Bridgerton. So we get like 4 episodes in May and then 4 episodes in June.
But we've already had to wait so long. I want them all at once. I know. Please. I'll watch them all in one go, I promise.
Me too. I want all the episodes. It's because we're talking about so many irrelevant things, but it's because what's happening is shows that drop all at once really aren't staying in like the zeitgeist for very long and like aren't being like talked about, and then you worry about the life of the show. Whereas like if you look at the shows that people have like spoken of, like has the most buzz online, it's something like Succession or like The Last of Us, which dropped week to week. So
or I guess The Traitors.
Oh, The Traitors. Yeah, The Traitors is a great example. So yeah, so like streaming services are like struggling and they're like trying to find a way because there's so much content now. So they're trying to find a way to like keep attention on them for as long as possible. I don't care, I want Bridgerton.
Me too. But it does make sense. I guess like when we were watching shows when we were younger, I remember talking about them for like weeks and weeks and weeks because you're like, oh my god, did you watch this week's episode? What happened this week? Blah, blah, blah. Whereas I guess with a lot of the ones that you watch all at once, you are like, okay, cool, next.
Oh, like the ones that I watch the most or that I'm watching now is obviously Vampire Diaries for this. I'm rewatching Gilmore Girls. I'm gonna go back to One Tree Hill and the OC because I always do. Like those things, and it's like none of the new shows I rewatch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like if you think about what you've actually like spoken about this year, TV-wise, this year, this and last year, it's probably more likely to be the stuff that dropped weekly.
It's Vampire Diaries.
Or Barbara Pulls, obviously, it's Vampire Diaries. But that did drop weekly. Again, I think we are the exception.
Yeah.
I don't think everyone's discussing it weekly.
They should be.
No, because also if it's not, you don't know where people are. Like a Love Island as well. I don't know how I used to do Love Island because it's just such a commitment when it's all at once.
That was a whole summer's commitment, I feel.
Yeah, and it's on now. It's like All Stars, which I just can't commit myself to.
It's on now.
Yeah, they've got like all the, well, I'll tell you about it when I see you, Alice, because it's such a side note of this podcast.
It's so not in the purview. Any last thoughts on the episode before we move on?
Didn't love it. R.I.P. Luca. He deserved more, like, that they deserved to do something more with his death or, like, recognise
it. Yeah, I feel like it had a lot of potential and they did a few cool starts of things that could have come into something more, but I feel like they let them all down a little bit. Like, I thought, as you said, like, Luca's entrance into the Salvador house was really cool. The Elena and Catherine bit at the beginning was really cool. Like, there were quite a few cool snippets, but they were dampened by the rest of it.
Yeah,
completely agree. And I think it's also like, as we spoke about at length, like it's just brought a lot of issues with the show very much to the forefront. The only thing I wanted to say that we didn't talk about real quick is just to say Damon and Catherine, they had a lot of scenes. They have the great energy of two absolute psycho bitches together. And I really, really loved Catherine's little pout when Damon rejected her. I thought that was so funny.
Oh, that was great. And she looked friggin' awesome. She looked insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's not used to getting rejected. Oh, yeah, I did want to say we find out that they have 6 spare bedrooms, so there's 8 bedrooms in the Salvatore house.
Oh, wow, that's really good information.
Yeah, because Damon's like, there are six other bedrooms, go find one. That's what he says when he rejects her.
Okay, do we think Stefan is included in that? No. So it's a 7-bedroom house?
No, I think it's an 8-bedroom house.
It's like 8.
Well, I guess if it was a boarding house, okay. We had to have quite a few rooms.
Yeah. Okay, this is fascinating.
And I swear they sometimes make people sleep on the sofa, which now is just like incredibly redundant. They just clearly don't want to build another set, which is like fine, but like so yeah. redundant. Just like don't show them sleeping. Get them to walk into them.
Okay, let's move on to stats. So what are we adding this episode?
2 deaths. One to Damon and 1 to Stefan, Luca and Jonas.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, I actually added one other, which I was going to discuss with you. So it's at the scene where like Catherine's trying to seduce Damon, and he's talking about like how come Emily Bennett was killed, and Catherine was like, "Oh yes, this was me, and I didn't know we put Catherine killed Emily, even though she wasn't technically the person who did it. She didn't burn Emily, but." She is the reason Emily was burnt at the stake for being a witch.
I agree, but I worry that it's too... Cause I feel like if it's intent, I feel like a lot of other people would be assigned a lot of other people's deaths.
I think it's a dangerous line of thinking. But if we don't think dangerously, who will?
Well, exactly. I just wanted to raise it because I was like, we never knew about Emily's death and it was referenced. But I was intrigued to see what you guys thought. But fair, it's a no.
Okay, so yeah, we were talking earlier about whether this was to support Candice King's singing career. And I still can't work it out because I did look it up. In 2006, she released an album, It's Always the Innocent Ones, where she wrote 12 of the 14 tracks. But that was in 2006. And then after that, she released nothing. So this wasn't like to go side and side with a pop career. It's just very weird that she gets multiple chances.
Unless she just wanted an outlet for it.
She gets multiple chances to sing. And when another cast member starts, like a male cast member starts a music career, their songs are in it. But when Kat Graham starts a music career, she neither sings in the show nor are her songs ever featured. We had her singing on one, but like, you know what I mean? It's really weird.
Yeah, it's a weird choice.
I can't work it out. The band that Caroline forced to be her backup are a real band, or at least they were at the time of the episode airing. They are called the S.O. Stereo, and they are a Charlotte-based rock band. And in season 1, episode 4, You're Undead to Me, their song What a Heartbreaks was featured in a scene in which Matt and Elena played pool at the grill. So they have on the show before.
That's fun. I was hoping it would be The Fray, because wasn't Candice King married to the lead singer of The Fray? So that would have been fun if they got them on.
Not at this point, though, because she dated quite a few of the cast.
Ooh, who?
I said in one episode, I can't quite remember. I think she maybe dated who played Tyler. And she may have dated Steve McQueen who played Jeremy.
No, she did. I've seen that on Instagram. Not that I trust them, but I had seen that.
Anyway, that's it for this week. We will be back next week refreshed, leaving behind the negativity of this episode, maybe. But in the meantime, if people want to contact us, how can they do it?
You can find us on formerly Twitter at Miss Mystic Pod,
or Instagram at Missing Mystic Falls Pod.
Or now you can find us on TikTok at...
Gosh, what is it? That's a great question. I think it's Missing Mystic Falls Pod, I imagine.
This is a new account.
But yes, we do have a TikTok.
We're cool now.
Yeah, follow us on TikTok. Very exciting. We're so nearly Gen Z, you won't believe it. Missing Mystic Pod. Missing Mystic Pod on TikTok.
Yeah.
New episodes will be up every single Wednesday. But you can go onto your podcast app of choice and you can give us 5 stars and only 5 stars. We don't want anything else. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.